This podcast is sponsored by Great White Hot Sauce. It's a small batch, handmade hot sauce made specially for you. So if you like hot sauce, you'll love Great White Hot Sauce. It's the hot sauce that bites back. Find it at www.trygreatwhite.com.
Well, here we are, episode 79. Look at that. Some people didn't think we'd get past 9. 79 episodes later, we're still here. And on this episode, there's no Jack, so it's new. It's all right. I got my buddies from the Music Relish podcast, Mark Smith and Lou Colicchio. We're going to talk about recent music news. Recent is in the last month. So we're going to have some articles to talk about, and we'll just, you know, we'll just shoot it. See where it happens. See where it goes. And I got trivia.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
The KOFB studio presents Milk Crates and Turntables, a music discussion podcast hosted by Scott McLean. Now, let's talk music. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Amanda, for that wonderful introduction. As usual, young Amanda will be home from college tomorrow. She has an extended Thanksgiving break. Can't wait to see my little girl. It's always nice. She brings a lot of energy to the house. She's a great kid. She definitely has a voice for radio and podcasting. But try to get an 18-year-old to do anything like that. Tell them how much talent they have, and they're like, no, that's not what I want to do. I said, you'll see. You'll see. Anyways, welcome to the podcast. I think I already said that. You know the name, so I'm not going to say that. I'm streaming live right now over YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, DLive, and Twitter. Yeah. The new and improved, much funner Twitter. Now, if you're listening to this on the podcast platforms and you want to watch the podcast live, maybe we're on every Wednesday night, usually 8 o'clock. You can find the YouTube channel, Milk Crates and Turntables. And you can find it on Twitch also. So tune in. Plus, there's a YouTube channel, Milk Crates and Turntables, that has every episode because, well, I'm streaming live. And once it's done streaming, it's on YouTube forever. Unless I get the infamous 3 strikes. Dun, 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 dun. Anyways, no Jack tonight. Jack is at the Smile concert. That is Tim York and one of the guitarists from Radiohead. They have a little side project called The Smile. I asked Jack about that. I said, I haven't really listened to them. He says, well, they kind of sound like Radiohead. So I said, then why don't the fucking do Radiohead then? I don't get it. You got to do something different on the side. Do something different. Anyway, but they're still talented. I always say Radiohead, musician for musician, is the most talented band in the world. No doubt about it. You know who else is talented? My buddy Mark Smith from the Music Relish podcast. Hey. Enough of that. What's up, buddy? Are you there? Uh-oh. I can't hear his mic. Look at that.
Every time I have a cute intro, I mute my mic.
Look at the rookie mistake. He muted his mic. I saw Lou appeared and then disappeared. So Lou has been having some technical issues trying to get on today. Why, we were supposed to go on at 7:30, but that doesn't matter.
I'm in contact with him. I'm keeping track
of him. If he pops in the middle of the show, then we'll have a little moment of Lou trying to get Lou live. But in the meantime, it's me and Mark Smith from the Music Relish podcast. How you doing, buddy? Good?
I'm doing good. How are you, Scott?
Good, good, good. How's the Music Relish podcast going? What do you guys got going on? What'd you have going on?
It's going good. Well, let me tell you, my vocal coach, Perry, says I have to talk lower. So I have to talk lower. All
right. Perry Dedovich, the brainchild and the plantation owner.
Colonel Kurtz.
Colonel Kurtz of the Music Relish podcast, from what I understand. He's a true professional.
He is.
Although until I see him, I still think he's a bot. I think you're just making up that he really exists. I think he's like Hal on fucking Space Odyssey, 2001 well, Space Odyssey.
That's why we keep him half not lit, you know? It's like, you know, those boxing things. It's only the torso and the head. You may have him in a chair. So.
Yeah. There you go. Boxing Bob or something, right? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah, the show's going good. We're doing 2.5 hours. We just talk and talk and talk. And it's amazing when you talk how quick time goes. So we're going to try and do 2 hours next time.
Oh. Yeah, well, we've done more than a few two-hour shows. That's for sure. I have two Facebook accounts, and I run them both at the same time because it's two different algorithms. So I don't know who I get on each one. So some people get double posts, different Facebook profile pictures. But one of them, I was a bad boy, and they got me for no live streaming for like fucking 3 months. Wow. So I started live streaming on my other account, and I just share it over to that account, the old account. And when they comment, I can't see them comment. So. I'm going to kind of keep that on the side right now on my phone and pay attention to it.
You need a bigger phone so you can put it off there.
Need a bigger phone. I got the biggest phone they got. I got the biggest phone they got.
That's what she said.
Hey, wait a minute now. There you go. That's the one. So everything's going good on the Music Relish podcast?
Yeah, it's going very good. We're, You know, we're each teaching each other about music and recommending albums to listen to. So every week, one of us recommends it, and I've discovered some music that I never heard before. Lou and Perry just know a lot of stuff that I don't know. They're years ahead of me.
They do have a vast knowledge, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Hopefully Lou gets to use some of his tonight. We'll see.
He's coming.
So, you know, I always talk about Lou's notebook, the infamous notebook, the notebook I want to get my hands on. So I see that you went out of your way and you bought a very thick notebook. You got to describe it to the podcast listeners.
Podcast. It's an inch thick, but I'm only 2 pages in because I've only put 2 shows in it. So I'm catching up to Lou.
Lou starts scrolling through that thing like Indiana Jones going into a map.
His should be in the Smithsonian. It's packed with more facts than an Encyclopedia Britannica.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So let's see. This episode, we're going to talk about some music news. I came across an interesting article the other day. Now, we'll kind of do this a couple of ways since this is the first time we're really doing this. I'll read a little bit of the article. We'll comment on it afterwards. And I'll give the gist of the article. This one, it's from Britpop News. Now, Britpop is always interesting. You know, British pop, that's, you know, you go back to Oasis versus Blur. And they love rivalries over there. Like these bands, it's not like the US. They just love going after each other. So it says, the articles, I got this like 4 days ago, I think. It says, today in Britpop News, the Jams, you know, the Jam, Town Called Malice, and
Paul Weller, yeah.
The Jam's Paul Weller, where one time during the show, when Jack was on, I referred to him as Peter Weller, and he says, whoa, what did you call him? His name is, and I said, Paul Weller. And he's like, that's name is Paul Weller, not Peter Weller. And I went, okay, all right. And then I remembered, Peter Weller is an actor. There is actually a Peter Weller. And he does a lot of sci-fi movies and shit.
RoboCop,
exactly. Yeah. That's what he's best. And I was like, I fucking knew I knew that name. Like, Paul, Peter, Paul. All we need is Mary, and the whole fucking thing is set, right? Mary Weller. Peter, Paul, and Mary Weller. That should be a band.
Wow. Well, let me tell you, I'm a big Paul Weller fan. Big.
Yeah, so he says, and as we've talked about, Style Council, right? He went in a total another direction with Style Council after the jam. He says, the Jam's Paul Weller told Record Collector magazine that he thinks the Cure singer Robert Smith is, quote, a fat fucking cunt. And then it says, the article goes on to say, it wouldn't be a real Brit pop spat without at least one of the Gallagher brothers involved. And unsurprisingly, the whole thing started because the interviewer brought up how Noel Gallagher's new song reminds him of The Cure's classic Disintegration song from the album Disintegration, A Forest. So the reply from Paul Weller was, really? I can't fucking stand The Cure. Fucking fat cunt with his lipstick and all that bullocks. He's my age as well, isn't he? He's a fucking knob end. I don't like him. There you go. This is someone I wouldn't work with. I'd fucking slap him or something.
Now, Scott, you got to read that with a cigarette-stained voice.
I can't. I know exactly what you're saying. I can't.
That sounds like Paul to me.
And then it says, the Cure keyboardist Roger O'Donnell chimed in, tweeting at Weller in defense of Smith. I've always thought, as Spike Milligan said, people who live in glass houses should pull the blinds down before removing their trousers, Mr. Weller. I've never heard it put in that tone. Let's see. Louder Sound pointed out that the Cure jam beef may go back decades. In 1985, Smith drew shade at Weller, essentially calling him a fraud. He said, quote, people who think they're socially aware and lend their names to things like Paul Weller and stuff, I mean, it does no good at all, ultimately. And Smith said, because you'd have to be particularly stupid to believe someone like Paul Weller.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Weller kind of paved the way for that whole fucking new wave movement, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's one of the Jam is like, you know, one of the creators of that sound in a sense. So I thought that was a pretty interesting article.
In the court of public opinion, I would say Paul would win that, because when I talk to people here that in this country that don't know who Paul Weller is, I said, you got to understand, he's looked up as up there with Paul McCartney in England.
Yeah.
So, and I love The Cure. They're great. But maybe Robert Smith should rethink the lipstick at this point in his life.
Oh, that dude is uglier than a bag of assholes. I'll tell you what. That dude, when he gets all, I mean, even without the makeup, it's like, yeah. I always said about Joe Jackson, you had a face made for radio. You know, I had a face like that, I'd fucking cover it in white makeup and lipstick too.
I can't wait to hear Robert Smith's reply. I want to hear.
Yeah. Well, I'll call. I'll say the same. I'll just quote Peter Weller.
You have committed a crime.
You have committed a felony. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that. Yeah. So Paul Weller dishing shade back.
He's back to dishing shit on people. I haven't heard something like that from him in years, you know.
So a friend of mine, if I remember the story correctly, and I'm sure he'll it's somewhat in the, it's, he told me this a long time ago, but a friend of mine, name is Todd Sockman. He's a fan of the show, actually. He's a listener, I should say. I'm a little egotistical to say fan. He's a listener. I've known him for 30 something years. He told me a story how he was in Germany or something, and he won a dinner, like have dinner with the Cure type thing, I think it was. And I don't know if he really knew who they were. Or they were just coming up. They were just really kind of catching. And from what I remember, he said it was fucking chaos. Like there was food throwing everywhere and just like total like disrespect to the restaurant, and were just being,
I was waiting for you to say that he said it was really boring. I always get the feeling that the Cure are very boring guys when you're sitting with them, you know, but
yeah, when you know, they're younger though, when they're younger, yeah, they're a little more active, I think. True. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Did you come up with any stories you might want to touch on?
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a couple deaths over the last 3 weeks. The most widely known, of course, was Jerry Lee Lewis. And I thought he had died already. I felt bad thinking that. I'm like, oh, he died?
My buddy sent me, he sent me the text, and I didn't read it well enough. And I sent him a clip from the movie Bellboy with Jerry Lewis. And I was like, he was the funniest guy ever. Now, my buddy thought I was kidding. But then I sent him another clip. Then I realized he said Jerry Lee Lewis.
You're fucking all the names up here.
I get it. Oops. That's still funny. That's still one of the most brilliant comedy movies ever made.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The Bellboy is absolutely genius. Genius. Should be in the Smithsonian for comedy.
Yeah. But, you know, when I was you read the obituary, you know, and it just, one thing I remarked, what I noticed about his career was he was really rising up. He was getting big and he was going to go to England and he was up there with Elvis and he decided to take his 14-year-old wife / cousin with him. And they were like, you shouldn't do that. And evidently she was standing around and a music journalist or a reporter said, who are you? She's 14. She says, I'm Jerry's wife, you know. That just destroyed that tour. And it kind of like destroyed it, like not destroyed, but it put a damper on his career. He didn't recover for years after that. So, and they kind of glossed over that in the movie about his life. They really didn't touch on that.
I love the scene though, when he had the issue with Chuck Berry on who goes on last. And he ended up going on first and then he lights his piano on fire and ends the show. He said something like top that as he's walking out.
You could not get two more strong-willed men in the same stage.
Yeah, I see Lou snuck into the green room. So let's take a little sidebar here and bring him on and see. Staring at the computer screen, right? I see him in the green room in black and white. He's got that look. So let's see. Let's bring him on. Are you there, Lou? Nope, still can't hear him. He's making the look. So I'll keep him on the screen. Oh. Just for entertainment purposes.
Oh, I'm texting him now.
He's in the intro. He has to be on the show somehow.
That's true.
I included him in the intro. So who else? Who else passed away?
So the other one that passed away, were you familiar with Robert Gordon? He started out as a punk rocker.
'70s. Was he the Clash?
No, but he's from the United States. But he started out in punk and then he was convinced to try his hand at rockabilly and he put out two albums with Link Wray on guitar. And then he had a hit with My Girl's Red Hot and he also covered Marshall Crenshaw's Somehow, Some Way. I liked his version better, but he passed away. Not very well known, but he revived rockabilly in that punk style. And he used in L.A. late '70s, early '80s. Rockabilly was huge, and it kind of had a connection to punk. I'm not really a punk fan, but the rockabilly sound was great with that.
Yeah, so, who I was talking about was I forget his name. He was one of the original founders of the Sex Pistols, and then he played with Public Image Limited. He just passed away the other day.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So what else you got?
We can hear you, Lou, but you're coming through the other mic. Just real quick. The other guy that died is, it's a bit of a story because you won't know him. His name is Brooks Arthur. And he was from this area, but he died in L.A. And I just...
Being New Jersey?
Rockland County, New York. I'm right over the border from New Jersey, 30 miles out of the city. Every day when I drive to my job at the hospital, I would pass a building with a little plaque that said, you know, it was a landmark and it said 914 Studio. So I asked someone at the hospital that lived in the town, Blauvelt, New York, what is that? He goes, oh my God, Bruce Springsteen recorded there. Born to Run, the song was recorded there in his first two albums. So I researched, this was like over 10 years ago. And yeah, there's a lot of big names were recorded at this is total suburbia. Like this is Rockland County. And it was just an interesting thing. In that studio, James Taylor recorded, Janis Ian did her big hit 17, which was, huge. And then I kind of researched the Bruce side of it. And I found out that when he was recording there, It was too far to drive back to Red Bank, New Jersey. It's like a 2-hour drive. So he would camp out back. And Bruce used to run into the 24/7 diner next door, which I went to all the time growing up. And he really liked their scrambled eggs. It was just a big part of rock history right in my area. So
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the guy, this guy, Brooks Arthur, you know, he sold the studio. It closed up. It's now an auto body shop. But when he went to L.A., he worked with Adam Sandler. He did the Hanukkah song. He produced that for him. So he kept he kept very successful, you know.
a Christmas / Hanukkah classic.
Yeah.
That's a classic.
That was huge. The funny though, and the controversial thing was when Bruce recorded there, his first two albums, then when he was starting Born to Run, it took him 3 months to record the song Born to Run. He wanted to get everything right. So that was recorded at the studio, but then he got John Landau as his manager, and John Landau was with Rolling Stone, music journalist, and he hated the studio. He just didn't like it. So he moved Bruce down to the city, and that was the end of that. But, it's an interesting story. When you got rock history right in your backyard.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Not a lot of rock history down here in Boca Raton. Well, oh, no. All right. Wait a minute. Corey Hart. At one point, he still might live here. He might be living here in Boca Raton.
Does he wear sunglasses?
No, not at night. Uh-huh. Not at night. No, I've told the story a couple of times. My now wife, she's lived in Boca for a while, and she took her kids trick-or-treat when they were little, and she, you know, walk up this driveway, and there's this guy sitting there, and she looks, she goes, "Are you Corey Hart?" Like, she recognized him, and he's like,
"Really?
Yeah, that's me." She's like, "Wow!" And he's like, "Yeah, I know everything. It's like, it's cool. No big deal. And she's like, "Okay." And she's like, "How long?" They just start talking. And he's like, "Yeah, I got a place in the Bahamas. I have a house there, or Bermuda, one or the other." And he lived in Boca. So he says, "I kind of go back and forth." So Corey Hart did very well for himself.
Yeah,
he made a lot of money off that song.
You know? And, you know, he's probably involved with other things. All these guys have to do is write a song for somebody, too.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that song has been played in movies, and I'm sure he has a writing credit on it. You know, I don't think he was one of those, like, force-fed songs. You know? Yeah, you look good, you sound good, sing this song.
Would he be a one-hit wonder? He might be.
Let me see. Sunglasses at Night. And maybe he had another one, but probably he could be considered. Well, let's go by Jax. Lou's off the screen again. Let's go by Jax. Well, what do you call a one-hit wonder? Because that's how he talks. Oh, what do you mean? What do you call a one-hit wonder? Although when he's on the show, when I imitate Jack, I say, so what do you mean about a one-hit wonder? What's that mean? He's like, why do you say that? I said, because that's how you talk, Jack.
Hey, wait a second. Are you not supposed to pick on someone when they're not there to defend themselves?
Oh, I will crush him like a bug.
I can't wait till he's back. Him.
Yeah, I can. I can wait.
Well, those of us who watch the show like it when Jack's on, okay?
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're not the only one that says that, so I guess I'm stuck with him. 79 shows. He's been on 60 of them, it seems.
Wow.
That's something.
79 shows.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it just kind of dawned on me today. I looked at my wife and said, 79 shows. That's not bad.
That's pretty damn good.
Yeah, there's nothing, no end in sight. And I think we've had maybe a couple of topics, but we've kind of overlapped into topics that we've talked about in the past, which is, as you and I discuss, is inevitable.
Yeah.
When you're talking about music, there's always going to be something you go back to, because some of this stuff just kind of intertwines with each other.
Right. Cause like, say you talk about crappy sounding albums. Well, in a year, there's going to be 5 more crappy sounding albums coming out, or you're going to think of more stuff and you can expand on stuff . So we just hit our 1-year anniversary for the cameras. You know, we had a previous existence, you know.
That existence doesn't get talked about from what I understand.
It's down. No one will ever hear it.
It's the lost tapes. Someday when you guys are making it big with the Music Relish podcast, the lost tapes are going to come out. They'll be worth something.
And you're going to be auctioning off Lou's notebook because you will have stolen it from him, right?
I haven't got my hands on that. Hey, Lou, I'm coming to visit, buddy. I'll be in the area. I'll be in Nashville. Yeah. Where do you live? What time are you working?
You have an alarm system?
Yeah, you don't have one of those ring things, do you? Just asking. Just asking.
Because if you do, I got to put a mask on.
Yeah. I just happen to carry one of those fucking masks with me anyways because, well, you know, I don't know. You never know. You never know. Anyways, what was that? Just got sidetracked. So let's move on. I was going somewhere, but I get distracted easily.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Tell you what, don't pick on Jack, but you can pick on me all you want next week when you're on. Pick on me all you want.
Well, I will.
Don't pick on
Jack. I will.
Guitar players, we're sensitive, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to destroy next week. And we're going to do one on Tuesday night. Because, well, Wednesday night is the night before Thanksgiving. Now, this is tentative. You might be sitting in that same chair next Tuesday night, my friend. So stand by because I'm doing a show no matter what.
Well, I better get my free turkey soon.
Yeah.
Not that night.
Hey, I bought a couple of turkeys the other day. And because, you know, you hear the news, oh, turkeys, there's going to be a rush on turkeys. Turkeys are expensive. Everything's expensive, right? And so... My wife and I last Saturday went to Restaurant Depot, and they're like, "How did you get into Restaurant Depot? All you got to do is have an LLC. Fucking make one up. They don't care, right? As long as it's registered, they'll give you a card. You can sell ants, and you can get into Restaurant Depot, right? And I got a couple of halal turkeys, right? Which is basically, it's like kosher with the twist, with like a Muslim twist, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Listen, they say the birds are treated respectfully. They're killed respectfully. And my wife knows a lot about a lot of that stuff, like religious aspects. She said, like, you know, just like kosher, if the blade even has the slightest nick in it, like even the littlest tiny nick, they have to get rid of the blade, use another one. So, you know, and the real good thing about it is they're not loaded with hormones and fucking
and
chemicals to make them, you know, make a 12-pound turkey 17 pounds.
Right.
You know? So I'm curious to see how those are going to turn out.
I know people that buy halal meat, and they don't have a religious reason. They just buy it because it's better
meat.
They
know it's good, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So...
There's nothing wrong with a humane way of you know, doing it.
Hey, listen, I'm a Morrissey fan. I'm not a vegan. I like a good steak, so me and him disagree there. But, you know, you got to think sometimes they do get slaughtered pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's not funny, but it is. Shouldn't laugh. Okay, I got sidetracked again. Okay, listen.
Somehow you make slaughter sound funny, you know? I don't know how you do that.
Next Tuesday night, and I'll release it Tuesday night. Like I said, Lou will still be working on his computer by then. I think Lou threw in the hat tonight.
He's still just trying. He just texted me, break a leg.
Well, all right. So we're on our own. Listen, I got this article from fucking throat. Hold on. I'm going to kill my mic for a second. All right, I'm back.
I think you got something on your shirt on that one.
Oh, on my sleeve stack?
Oh, wow, yeah.
I got one on my sleeve stack?
You got a sleeves on your sleeve stack, man.
I got a sleeve stack shirt. You know the sleeve stack.
That's an awesome shirt. Right? Oh, I grew up with that. Come on.
Yeah, right?
Scared the crap out of me.
As retro as it gets. In the land of the lost.
The worst special effects ever, but I loved it.
So
I knew it
great,
was bad
though.
When I was seven, and I loved it.
Yeah. And like anything in Hollywood, they fucking go and destroy it by making a movie out of it and killing it, you know?
Yep.
But I'll tell you, my all-time favorite Saturday morning like show like that, it was a little clip, and they were like five-minute episodes on the Banana Splits. It was Danger Island. Danger Island was so fucking cool, man.
Yeah.
It was such a cool, Jungle. And you got Jungle's like the jungle dude that fucking, Because they get shipwrecked and the pirates chasing them, you know, and then you got the black guy, the white guy, the girl, even they, listen, it was very diverse. It was a very diverse cast. What's his name? Mutan. Mutan was the pirate who was chasing them. Yeah. Fuck it. I love, that's my all time. It was,
I
like,
just wrote
one
it down.
Season.
I'm going to look for it.
Oh, Danger Island was great, man. It was great. Great episodes.
I was a Looney Tunes guy. That's really all I watched. Tunes. Yeah.
I liked Gulliver's Travels. I liked all that. I thought Hanna-Barbera cartoons were better in the end than Looney Tunes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked the Hanna-Barbera.
They were cool. They were really cool.
Plus, they went out, and then you got the Sid and Marty Krofft shows, and, you know, the good old days.
Yeah.
The good old days, which will never come back because once they invented a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week comedy cartoon network, that killed Saturday mornings forever.
Yep. Yep. These
kids never knew the beauty of watching Saturday morning cartoons. They just never know the beauty of it.
24/7 cartoon channels gave stoners something to watch at 2 a.m. Because I always said, who the hell, I didn't know, like, who's going to watch Nickelodeon at 2 in the morning? Someone said, stoners. I said, oh, okay.
Well, Adult Swim is probably became a better channel for stoners.
Yeah, yeah.
Adult Swim is pretty good.
See, us people who drink wine, we fall asleep. So we're
Yeah. So my buddy, again, Todd Sockman, sent me this article. He hit the link. And it says, title of the article is, it's from Billboard Music News. NXS fans mount campaign for rock and roll induction. A change.org petition is gathering steam with the objective of getting NXS inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Despite their treasure chest of songs, style in the 80s, the heyday, the ability to fill stadiums a long way from home, NXS is one of the many bands waiting for the Rock Hall nod. And then, you know, it goes, at the time of the writing, there was 11,000 fans joined the petition. So, it goes on to about, it's basically about the people that that got it together, team induct NXS, and it's a couple girls and a guy. And so, without going into the article, I think we get the idea. So they were formed in 77. So they've been around for a while.
Yeah.
Do you think they should go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I was just going to make a comment because you and Jack and me and Perry and Luce, should this band be in? And no, I don't. And I don't hate them. I don't think they're Rock and Roll Hall of Fame material, but I do know NXS fans that just think they're the best band in the world.
So let's see, six, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So they have 12 albums, right? So okay. The first one came out in 80 called NXS. And the second one came out in 81 Underneath the Colors. And this is when bands did one album a year, not like these lazy motherfuckers today that, like, all right, we're going to tour and then we're going to take a year off. And then we're going to 3 years later, come out with another album and blah, blah, blah. Then in 82, Shabu Shaba came out. Now that's where they broke. Right. That's where they kind of, and to this day, one of my favorite videos, an absolute, I would have to say, in the top 10 favorite songs ever, The Right Thing.
Yes.
Right. It's a great, great fucking song. Right. That. And then The Swing came out. Great album in 84. Listen Like Thieves. Great album. 85.
It was huge.
I'll call it their Joshua Tree came out in 87 with Kick.
Yeah.
Right. That was a monster, fucking monster album.
And that's when I got my first CD player. And that was one of my first CDs.
Monster album. I mean, I was in the Philippines when that came out and it was, again, they were all video bars at that point, giant video screens with fucking like sound systems like you'd see at a concert. I mean, these bars held, they didn't hold back. Probably one of the reasons I have tinnitus this day, which to this day, you'll never get rid of it. It's stuck in my head. But, and then in 90, X came out with Suicide Blonde and it had about three hits on it. Right. And then it just kind of falls off. Welcome to Wherever You Are in 92, Full Moon, Dirty Hearts, 93, Elegantly Wasted, 97. Now, he died in, when did Michael Hutchinson die?
I think it was after 2000. Michael Hutchinson. Right?
Was it after 2000? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So definitely after. Then in 2005, you know, they came out with Switch, and then 2010, Original Sin.
I didn't like that they continued after he died. I didn't either.
J.D. Fortune, you know, they had the whole reality show and
yeah,
to find a lead singer, and they get this, and you probably know, but because you've listened to the show for a while, I am not big on replacing lead singers. I mean, the dude that replaced Steve Perry in Journey, Filipino dude,
yeah,
I'll give him a pass because that dude's just fucking talented, and he sounds just like him. So you got that going for you, you know.
I felt bad for the guy that went right after Perry, Steve Allgary. Well, because he had his own voice, he sounded like his own singer.
Yeah, but he also sounded a little like Steve Perry, too, didn't he? Didn't he kind of look like him, too, a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I think
he was... Did they get him from a tribute band, or was that...
I think he was from Brooklyn, and he was working in a clothing store when he got the gig. So, yeah, I think that they saw him doing a tribute. But I have a DVD of them live with him, and, yeah, when he did the Steve Perry stuff, he sounded like him, but not like Arnold. Arnold is a lot more Steve Perry sounding.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
But on the original stuff, he kind of had his own style, but you know, Neil Sean was like, you got to sing like Perry. Yeah. And he lost his voice because they're a heavy touring band. It's hard for singers to be with Journey.
Yeah.
And when he couldn't keep up, they kicked him out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then they ended up better off.
Yeah.
They found that, what's his name? Arnold,
Purnell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They found him on YouTube.
Yeah.
He evidently, the dude's older than people think, too.
Mm.
You know, he was, and I was there for 2 years. Both my wives, Filipinas. Second one by total happenstance. So the Philippines has been in my, like, I'm basically at this point, since 1987, I'm half Filipino, I say. Mm. And I will tell you, they are a talented country. Those people are talented. And this dude... He was doing Steve Perry. He was doing like fucking Tom Jones. He could sing like four different people.
Wow.
Yeah. He wasn't just a Steve Perry guy. They just happened to see a video with him singing Journey songs. But he could do other people, which is fucking amazing.
And he still has his voice.
Still has
and
his
they
voice.
Tour constantly. And the fact is that he can still keep up those notes. It's amazing. And you say he's older than we think, which is he takes care of himself, which is,
Yeah. Some Filipinos age gracefully. Others, not so gracefully. But, hey, it's all a genetics thing, right? And I think I had told this story before. Have you ever seen them?
Live? No. With him? Of all the bands. I have two DVDs with him singing with
right.
him. So I've seen him live on TV.
So I saw him live, and he's great. He's great. And when he first started doing it, singing with them, he's all over the place. Like he's a mover.
Right? Yeah, he covers
the whole stage, front, back, side to side. And I guess the manager kind of had a little issue with him, and he said, basically, you can't do that. It's not what we do. It's not what Journey does. Journey is basically just, you know, move around, but don't. And he's like, that's all I know how to do. And they were like, well, he goes, oh, well, I guess he kind of stood his ground. He's like, this is what I do. I can't just stand there and sing.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, well, I guess. And I don't know if he played the ace card. You know what I mean? He played his wild card. He's like, he rolled the dice or however you want to put it. And
they
took a chance. But he was getting a lot of ground. They were gaining a lot of traction with him.
I say, if they kicked him out for that, that would have been stupid because they found, you know, they're not going to find another of him. I don't think so.
No.
And you see that there's a DVD of them in the Philippines and he's on fire in that concert.
He went home. I saw the whole documentary on that. Yeah. Right.
And he was he's passionate. I love seeing him run around the stage. But you know what was funny at that concert? Jonathan Cain looked pissed off the whole show. I don't know if the weather disagreed with him, but he's just there with a playing.
It was probably hot and humid.
And his hair. He's probably worried about his hair.
I could bet it was probably because I was stationed there. I was a canine handler. We'd go out only at night. Like the Edgar Winter album, We Only Come Out at Night.
Yeah.
Or They Only Come Out at Night. That was what us canine handlers did. Guardians of the Night, they called us. And it's fucking hot.
Yeah.
So during that season, it's literally 100% humidity.
Wow.
And we're trudging through fucking 8 feet of elephant grass, going through banana trees, like fucking in the bush.
Wow.
Just fucking sweating. You couldn't put weight on over there if you ate a box of Twinkies for lunch and dinner and then had cupcakes for breakfast. You couldn't put weight on over there. No, no, no.
Wow.
So yeah, that was probably his issue. It's probably too hot.
And Neil Sean always looks happy wherever he is. He's always doing his thing, you know. But
yeah. Every song, he walks to the front of the stage and lets everyone know that I'm Neil Sean and this is my band. And then I'm going to go back and then I'm going to sit. Then the next song, I'm going to wait. And then I'm going to walk to the front of the stage, show my guitar. And, you know, and then I'm going to walk backwards, you know, me and my hair plugs that actually came out good.
Yeah.
And good for him for getting them.
Yeah. You know,
when I saw them in West Palm Beach, it's an amphitheater and it was probably August. So it's kind of like Philippines weather.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It was a little muggy that night. No, it's only muggy up north. It's humid down here.
Exactly.
Up around you guys, gets muggy. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, they call it muggy for a reason.
Yeah. All the pollution just settles.
It's just, all you northeasterners, they're like, it's too fucking hot in Florida. Yeah. Yeah, take your humidity up there, your mugginess, and shove it up your ass. Tell me it's hot down there in the summer. Yeah, but you don't mind coming down here in the winter, do you?
If it's over 80, I'm hot. That's,
right? So
let me tell you, though, that lineup, when they were put out that DVD, they had this guy, Dean Castrovano, on drums. That's an amazing lineup because he was a damn good singer in his own right. So Arnold could go off stage and take a break and he would sing songs. And if you weren't really paying attention, you were listening to the audio, you might think it was him singing, but it's the drummer. I don't know if they still have him in the band. He got in a little trouble, but he's excellent, excellent drummer.
Did he get Me Too'd?
No, he got arrested for something. He was out, then maybe back in. But if you ever get a chance to watch that Philippines concert, it's a perfect example. He sings a couple Steve Perry songs. Like, he can sing pretty high. We're talking singing drummers. I mean, he really could handle it. He stayed behind the kit. He didn't come out front. So it gave Arnold a break. He could go backstage, rest his voice. So that lineup was really special.
Who else did he play with? Of any?
You know what? It's funny you're saying that. I believe he was with, I'm forgetting now. He was in a bunch of 80s bands. I'm thinking possibly with Hart, but I may be wrong, and then I'll get crucified for that one. Just an excellent drummer, and I like him better than Steve Smith, which Lou won't like to hear that because Steve Smith was a great. He was a guy that was on Escape, and he's a fabulous. But this guy Dean is the whole package. When you have a drummer that is cool looking, can sing great, you got it made.
Well, Lou won't hear it because he's still beating up his computer right now, I'm sure.
He'll hear it tomorrow and I'll get a call. We might have to have a music relish argument.
So with that, INXS, they want to put them in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So if they go, if they're on a list of groups that should go in, why not? Who should go in first? If you were to flip a coin, or not flip a coin, if you had to make a decision, who would go in first? INXS or Tears for Fears? Now, before I gave you all their INXS albums, Tears for Fears had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they had 7 albums, right? One of them without Kurt Smith, it was still a really good album. So they start off with a Hurting. It's a bomb right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
Then they go into their Joshua Tree, Songs from the Big Chair, Monster, still a fucking monster album, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Then they go into the Seeds of Love,
That's right, my
so that
favorite.
One, 83, 85, and 89, Seeds of Love. Elemental in 93 without Kurt Smith. Then they did Raul and the Kings of Spain because Roland can handle it himself. Roland Azarbal, right?
That's his name. Raul and the Kings of Spain is a great album.
That's a good song.
Yeah.
The song, that's one of the tracks on the album, I believe.
That's
right?
With the white cut. It's a white cover with a black and white picture, I think. Yeah, okay. That's
so Roland Azarbal, he could handle Tears for Fears by himself. So
yeah.
Because Kurt Smith wasn't there, still the same kind of sound. Nothing changed. They just didn't have his higher voice, whatever that's called. Falsetto voice, I think he had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you go into Everybody Loves a Happy Ending, 2004, which was a minor kind of. But then the tipping point in 2022, because they took a big time off. That's a fucking good album.
I have it in surround. It was limitedly released and it's mixed by Steve Wilson. I can't keep saying his name enough. That is, you don't have to hear it in surround. That is just a really good, and it won't get appreciated. The fans love it. It should have been bigger than it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to it and you're a Tears for Fears fan, do yourself a favor. Now, I think the thing that hurts them is there was a gap between 2004 and 2022. Right. But if you take all their work, they're back to touring. They've been out. Well, they always did. Like he said,
yeah.
Roland Azarbal said during the show, I saw them a couple months ago. I saw them in June, actually. He said, it's kind of strange going from stadiums and arenas to casinos and racetracks and then back to arenas again. Like they've seen it all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it was sold out. It's, you know, up here in West Palm, I think they sold out pretty much everywhere they went for this tour, and they have not, absolutely not missed a beat. Now, who would go in first? Who do you think is worthy of going in?
Not a knock against the Nexus, but I look at the musical merits. That's the total musical output. I know the judges look at chart topping. I just think Tears for Fears, definitely.
Well, chart topping, they'll go song for song true. With.
I just think that they're really an important band. They're just the compositions. Again, not knocking in excess, but they're more of a pop band with good guitar. To me, Tears for Fears they just touched on so much. It was that 80s heavy, kind of like an extension of the progressive sound in a way. Just a serious musical statement. Definitely. If I was a judge, I'd say definitely Tears for Fears.
Right. And again, I think that their songs stand on their own. If you ask, that would be a good survey. Who do you like better, NXS or Tears for Fears? It's because they both have big followings, and I like both of them. Hands down, it's a tough decision. It's like Trump or Ron DeSantis. Not to bring politics into the show. I never do that. I say that jokingly. I don't want anybody to go, anybody get triggered.
See, now I'm going to bring it back here. I think that I find myself listening to Tears for Fears a hell of a lot more than NXS. But if I hear NXS, I love them. But if I'm like, say, what CD, as I look at my rack, I'm going to pull out a Tears for Fears, if anything, more often. Then again, I have more Tears for Fears than I have NXS albums. So, maybe
there was that infamous moment at the, I think it was the Grammys, when Michael Hutchins was presenting best new artist or something like that, or song of the year or album of the year, and not song of the year, album of the year. It was one of those. It was a good award, but one of the good ones. There's a lot of shit they give out too. And it was to Oasis and Michael Hutchins standing there, and the Gallagher brothers come up on stage with the band, and Noel Gallagher takes the trophy and he says, "It's good to get a trophy from a has-been. It's good that the has-been is given the going-to-be's the trophy."
Wow.
And he walks away.
That's Gallagher's.
Something to that effect. He said, It's funny that the has-been is giving it to the going-to-bes.
Oh, yeah. That hurts. Oof. And Hutchins was a nice guy.
Nice guy. Nice guy. He got punched in the face in France.
Really?
That's what happened. Yeah, he was, him and his girlfriend were out biking and the fucking on some road in France. And he had a flat or something like that. And this car came around the corner. They got those small country roads. And the guy beeped at him. And he was like, what? I'm just, you know. You look at Michael Hutchins. He's not a big dude, right? No. So the dude gets out of the car with his road rage, and he says something to him, and he says, well, what's your problem? And he just blasted him in the face, and he fell down, and Hutchins went down and whacked his head off the ground.
Aye.
And the guy gets in his car and drives away. He gets rushed. Somehow they, you know, his girlfriend, she was the model. Mm-hmm. She gets somehow an ambulance there, and they take him, and he had swelling. And after that, he had lost his ability to taste. And that really fucked him up, because he was really like a wine connoisseur, and he liked fine foods, fine dining. So that started getting to him, and then he started acting very erratic, and he would lock himself in his house for months and wouldn't talk to anybody. He just started going. It's the documentary. I forget the name of it. I just saw it a little while back. And it tells the whole story, and they tried to get back together, the band, and he was fucking acting all bipolar and shit. They were like, this isn't going to work. And
that all happened after the head injury.
Yeah. And then he ends up killing himself, and they do the autopsy, and they found out he had brain damage, which was causing him the headaches and the erratic behavior and the,
and this guy never got caught that punched him.
No. Guy just drove away.
I wonder if he knows he was responsible for the death of a,
right?
Yeah.
So
I didn't know
about
that.
That's the unfortunate story, but if there's that's the documentary, it's the name of one of their albums.
Okay.
I believe, or one of their songs, but it's very worth watching. Absolutely worth watching. I like most documentaries. I started watching this documentary. It's on Hulu. It's about the, they basically call it the Black Woodstock. It took place in Harlem. Questlove.
Yes.
Produced it and directed it. And I started watching it yesterday, and it got interrupted by something. And I was like, I got to really sit down and watch this. Like, on the fucking 80-inch screen behind me there in the recliners with the Bose system. And I said, I really have to watch this like alone and all, no interruptions, because I'll give a review on it when I watch it, but it looks so fucking amazing that these tapes, this whole thing was recorded. It was over like a whole summer.
Yeah.
And they said like 300,000 people total saw these shows. And once it was over, the fucking tapes were in a basement. And no one ever saw them again. And Questlove comes across somebody who had these tapes in their basement for 50 years. 50 years.
And we're talking about major artists right
there. Major. The fucking show starts with Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
Like, he comes out, and I saw his performance. They don't show the performance. They show the performers, but they also, like, show the crowd, and, you know, they just put
on. They didn't have too much video synced up to the music. I saw the first 20 minutes myself, and I just.
Oh, yeah. It's Stevie Wonder playing the fucking drums. I'm telling you, I've said it before, I'll say it again. The most talented musical person, musician, artist ever.
Stevie Wonder. Play everything. Yeah.
You know, and then people are like, no, so-and-so. Maybe he sings better, but he doesn't do the shit that Stevie Wonder did. Blind.
Yeah.
So I would say I'd have to go with Tears for Fears also.
Yeah.
Going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You see, this is what gets the hatred of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So every year, someone gets a petition. I want this band in. And if the band doesn't go in, everyone gets pissed off. You know, so
yeah,
like, yeah, I want to see, I want to see, I don't know, I just take some band, random band, Zebra. I love Zebra. I want them in. And if they don't get in, I hate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, Zebra had one huge hit. You know, doesn't mean it should be
that,
in. You
that's
know?
A stretch if they're saying that.
You know? No, but people do that. They want their favorite band in. And it's a business, first and foremost, that Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so, well, it's been a virtue signal lately. But anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
So I came across this article, and this is interesting. Speaking of, you mentioned them earlier, Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen reveals famous lyric people have been singing wrong, including himself. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Blinded by the Light?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. So it says, during a recent appearance on The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, the legend did his best to slam the door on the dispute. So it says, Bruce Springsteen just settled the debate about his iconic song, Thunder Road, and learned something new about his own music in the process. The legendary artist appeared on November 14th, The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, to clarify an old Twitter debate about a line in his classic 1975 song, Thunder Road. Some people believe the lyric in question is, a screen door slams, Mary's dress sways. While others believe it's a screen door slams, it's the opening line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mary's dress waves. Okay, so the difference is Mary's dress sways or Mary's dress waves. And he said this, I knew you were going to ask that question, so I came prepared, he said. And he pulls out a copy of the Thunder Road album. This record is almost 50 years old. 50 years ago, I was a sociopath, he added, while putting on a pair of eyeglasses, which I saw a picture of him recently. He looks like fucking Woody Allen. with glasses on. When he puts
only in the face, on. Not in the biceps.
Yeah. He said, I was insane about every single detail. And we've heard this about him, right? I was insane about every single detail that had anything to do with music. My album cover, my lyrics. I went over everything with a fine-tooth comb so everything would be perfect and completely accurate. The lyrics to Thunder Road are in this album. The correct lyrics, he said. Springsteen, whose new album, Only the Strong Survive, came out last week, then opened the album. He opened the Thunder Road album to look at the lyrics to note his own error. It says, the screen door slams. He said, I've been saying sways for almost 50 years. The screen door slams. Mary's dress waves, he said, reading from the album. He said, this is wrong. He said, while touching the album, and then starts to laugh. He says, I'm more confused than I was before I asked, Fallon said. So he says, this is wrong. I'm telling you this is wrong, Springsteen joked. How did that happen? Like, in other words, how did I let that go?
So he says that the album lyrics were printed wrong?
Yep. Oh. And the album lyrics says, the screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. It's supposed to be, the screen door slams, Mary's dress sways. Right? So he says, this is wrong. I'm telling you this is wrong. How did that happen? Thunder Road is only one song in Springsteen's legendary catalog. So for 50 years, he didn't know that the lyrics were wrong in that album, right? And he's been singing the right lyrics, but everyone's going, no, the album says this. This has to be right.
That's
pretty interesting.
That's a major screw up on his part, because having been in this production of things, you send the artist a proof of everything. Now, granted, he had a manager. Maybe the manager approved it, but somebody had to approve it.
He did everything. That's why he said, I was a sociopath. I went over everything with a fine tooth comb, even the album cover.
Yeah.
He didn't look at the lyrics.
Oops. I wonder if we're going to get a reissue now.
Right? Right. And no, people, no, your Thunder Road album is not worth anything today.
Damn.
Don't. I always tell people, You're an idiot if you think you're going to make money on your albums.
Born
they
to Run.
They are not baseball cards. They are not baseball cards.
It was a Born to Run album. Born to Run.
What's that?
Thunder Road was on Born to Run.
It was on Born to Run?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let me see. He says, he pulled out the, they don't say that it was, Born to Run. Everybody thinks, when albums, vinyl started getting a little bit hot, people are like, yeah. I got albums. You want to buy them? No, I don't want to buy your albums. No, let them sit in the basement or in the closet or in your attic. And you think you're sitting on a treasure and you're sitting on vinyl records that aren't being played. So no, if you want to give them to me, I'll be glad to play them and put them with other albums that where they belong and be displayed so people can flip through them when they come to my house. And usually people do.
Mm-hmm.
And they all think like, oh, I have something. And then it dies and they go back to sitting in the fucking closet again.
Yeah.
It's that human nature that when you want something, they're like, all of a sudden they want it back more. Like it's gotta be worth something.
Yeah. Yeah. I got caught with that. I don't think of that with my albums, just like musical instruments. They're there for me, to enjoy. But I pulled out an original pressing of Led Zeppelin II once, and someone had given it to me, some uncle or something. And I said to my son-in-law, who's very savvy with eBay and all this stuff, and I said, this is an original pressing. Do you think it's worth something? He said, Mark, you know how many millions of albums were pressed that year of this album or whatever, hundreds of thousands, and a lot of them are still around. No, it's not worth much. And he's right. That's it. Like a big selling album, Born to Run, huge amounts were made. It was a huge album. Frampton Comes Alive. I got an original pressing. Guess what? There's millions of original pressings around. So they're not going to be worth tons of money.
I went to a antique store and I just happened to look at some vinyl albums, and they had this Led Zeppelin, like Led Zeppelin II, maybe. It's a fucked up cover. They wanted $40 for it. Because they think it's a Led Zeppelin album.
Yeah.
Fucking idiots. But there is a Led Zeppelin album. I believe it might be Led Zeppelin, not 3.
With the wheel that spins?
No, that's Led Zeppelin. That's Led Zeppelin that's 3.
Yeah.
Is it Led Zeppelin 2? So there was a pressing that came out, and what had happened was it would skip. And the record company executive or the president got a copy, and he brought it home, and he used to give it to his daughter to play, to listen to. And she says, Daddy, it skips. And he's like, what? This is the gist of the story. And he went back and said that we stop the presses. This album is flawed because it skips. Tom comes to find out that the engineer had, I think it was the engineer, had requested that the album be pressed lightly, or like thinner than usual, to fit more sound on it.
More time.
It sounded like you got more sounds coming out of it. I don't know the complexities of the pressings and how they do it, but it was a little thinner than the other albums. So the average needle, if it was a cheap album, it would jump. So there are pressings out there that got through that they stopped, and then they went back because the guy was like, what's this all about? How does this happen? I just sent out 1,000 or whatever. Yeah. So, well, this is how we pressed it.
Yeah.
Fuck.
That whole age of lacquers and mastering for vinyl, it was like going back to the drawing board for different pressings. Whereas by the time I was doing it, you made a production master. Another one that's worth money, though, it's the screw-ups that are worth money. John Fogerty Centerfield. He had a song on there called Zanz Can't Dance, and it was about Saul Zanz, Creedence's manager. We've talked about this.
That's right. Yeah.
He got sued. He had to re-record just the word Zanz and make it Vance. I got the Zanz. Never going to try and sell it, but the point is, I like the fact that it was his FU to the guy, and I have it,
You have it, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's like the Clash, London Calling with the hidden track, Train in Vain, right? Mm. It's not on the It's not on the album listing. Like on the, it's not on.
Oh, it wasn't
the cover.
No. Okay.
And it wasn't on the album inside the vinyl listing, right? Because what happened was they had already sent the sent everything out to be done, and at the last second, the Clash threw in "Train in Vain," said put this on the album. But the covers had already been pressed, and the labels had already been pressed, so that's why you get the original London Calling album, an original pressing. "Train in Vain" is the infamous hidden track, and it's a great fucking song to be hidden.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then they had to go back on the second pressing, and third pressing, and they'll say featuring or hidden track "Train in Vain." And then I think they eventually put it on future pressings.
That's so if I'm ever in a used record store and I see that album, I'll look and see if it doesn't say Train
in Vain. If Train in Vain isn't on there, then that's got the hidden track on it. And it's just a cool album to own.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not only one of the greatest album covers ever, it's one of the greatest albums ever.
Yeah.
And that was their Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
Before Joshua Tree. Mm-hmm. And I always say Joshua Tree because that I don't know of any band that had such a fucking, just a rocket ship that took off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Between Unforgettable Fire and then fucking Joshua Tree. It was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. No. I mean, when Unforgettable Fire came out, you knew this band was going to get big. You knew it was rumbling. You had this feeling.
I mean, from their first album, boy, you knew.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then October was a great album. Difference, and they did the right thing. They changed the sound up a little. Then they went and got a little mature. Mm-hmm. And Unforgettable Fire, like you said, you're like, this is a serious album.
That was a big change in their sound with Daniel Lanois aboard and Eno. And it was a huge leap. And, but then Joshua Tree. Whoa.
Who's the guy that was he was one of the producers. Lillywhite.
Steve Lillywhite. I forgot about
who
him.
Who was married to the girl that sings with the Pogues on Christmas in New York, the Irish girl that got killed.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest Christmas songs ever.
Yep. You got the Schmitties.
She
got the Schmitties. You can't remember.
Yeah, I forget the name. That was a terrible accident. I mean, everyone's heard the song. Unfortunately, now, because of the wokeness, they edit out certain parts of the song or lyrics, or they change lyrics because it doesn't fucking matter. The song's been around, and all of a sudden they decide this is offensive. Go fuck yourself. That's like
they're trying to get
John Legend movie. Does "Baby It's Cold Outside." Fucking talk about a beta male, that motherfucking piece of shit. He does a whole beta male woke version of "Baby It's Cold Outside," and like, you know what, go wash your panties, you little bitch. I'm ranting now, but that shit fucking drives me crazy.
I think sometimes when they edit these songs too, again, how many classic rock songs end up in a Disney movie and it revitalizes, like they sell albums. So I think that they find these out songs, oh, Disney or whoever, we won't play in a kid's movie, so we'll just tone it down.
Yeah, like she says in Christmas in New York, she says, you're a bum, you're a maggot, you're a real, you're a real fucking faggot, right? And that's that's offensive. That's offensive. Fucking what? Just get out of here. One word and they're all fucking through the roof. Like I said, that John Legend beta male pussy.
I never heard that.
The song just to, don't ever listen to his version of Cold Outside. If you do, you got problems. you better get your testosterone.
Whoa. What if I come on a month from now and say I like it?
Right now, Jack, we're like, whoa. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not a good song. No, it does mean it's not a good song because I know what I'm talking about. I'm the one with the music podcast. Like anybody can do this. It's not, it's like anybody can do a music podcast, really.
No, not everyone can. Look at me.
No, they can. It doesn't mean it'll be good. Doesn't mean it will be a quality.
Some people
piece of,
do it on their phones for crying out loud.
the lost tapes, the music relish lost tapes. People, if you I wish they were still around because I'd be like, you got to hear these guys. This is fucking dedication.
Oh, you know,
this shit was dedication.
You delete something, it's never gone. You know that.
It's never gone. No, they have to get released. Eventually they'll get released. Like, you should do like a 100th episode and be like, just have Perry cut out clips from the old show and just say, this is what we used to be.
And the clips where we would drop out because we were all dropping out, you know, canceling each other with our voices.
People, you got to know, they were doing this on cell phones from different states. They did a podcast talking to each other on cell. So it made Zoom sound like this show. Zoom was amazing.
I'm too loud. So they said I was overstepping. So I had my phone like across the room. So you hear me all like echoey, but I was still too loud. It must have been my phone. You know,
Lou talks about how his hand would fall asleep holding the phone.
Me too.
He's like, my hand would fall asleep. I had to switch hands. They would do 2-hour podcasts on cell phones. I mean, fucking dedication that takes.
Then after we stopped that, I learned.
How many episodes did you do it?
There was a podcast mic for phones. If we had gotten those, we might have sounded a little better. I didn't know about that.
A little better. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype on that.
They did much more than the video. They were doing it for over a year before I became the guest. I'm still the guest. You know that. You know how Neil Peart and Rush said to the day they stopped touring, I'm the new guy in the band and I'm the guest. I'll know, you know, those two started. That's their show.
You're the guest.
I could be fired at any time. I'm like Ronnie Wood. He was like hired hand. He wasn't a member of the Stones or, you know, they can get rid of me.
Oh, Jesus.
So I better talk nicer about him.
Now, Ron Wood eventually got his due, didn't he?
Or
was
just,
yeah, I was going to say he was,
but it took a while.
Got there. Yeah. But people, I wish you could hear that. I mean, I listened to it and listen to the show, and as Mark has found out, I'm a sound freak. That's why I bought 3 different mics, and I finally got the one of the most expensive ones, and it's worth it to me. But to listen to their shit on cell phone, I was like, oh boy, this is
it's the equivalent
but the content is fucking, it's good. That's the thing.
It was the equivalent of, or some bands that refuse to make good sounding albums. I'm just trying to think offhand, you know, is that equivalent? Who cares about the quality? The Sex Pistols.
Yeah. Well, didn't I say, I think it was last week. I said it was, what's his name? Moondance and,
Van Morrison.
Yeah. Van Morrison had a contractual obligation. So he did like fucking 3 albums of just garbage, but that still didn't get him out of his contract.
It's that one song is totally nonsensical and he's all out of key. I can't remember the name of it. And he's just Perry played it for me. I was dying laughing.
Yeah. It sounded like he was literally just recording anything that came down. Yeah. But, all right. Well, listen, you know what? I'm going to move on. I have one more thing. I have one more.
Yeah.
And this is more of a, I'm just going to read the headline. I don't even need to get into it. New Rolling Stones 1960s box set to drop in 2023. Do you really give a fuck? Like, do you really fucking?
How about
another Rolling Stones box set?
How about I just listen to the original albums from the 60s?
How about if I just listen to Hot Rocks?
I
just listen to Hot Rocks.
Right? But
the thing is, this is going to have like, I don't know, 19 albums in it or something like that. Maybe. But there's I think, one album in there that has unheard cuts. You know, they always throw some.
How about
just fucking releasing that on its own?
Yeah.
Right? Again, just listen to Hot Rocks.
Yeah.
You get the 60s.
That might be the best greatest hits album.
It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I don't know. Listen, Bananarama has a pretty good fucking greatest hits album. I'm just saying.
Banana Splits?
I'm a big fan. I love Bananarama. I do. I fucking love Bananarama.
They were good.
I always did.
I am so sick. I'm sick of the Rolling Stones doing this and other bands too. I mean, it's right. Eric Clapton's done it. They've all done it. It's like, yeah, really? In this day and age, nobody's got a lot. We got money, but do we really want to? It's going to be $300, guaranteed.
And it's the 60s Stones. Like, again, Hot Rocks was like 64 to 72 or something, wasn't it? Something
get
like that.
Get a little of that Mick Taylor early 70s. Yeah.
When they that was when they were at their peak.
Oh yes, definitely.
Yeah. They yeah, so I don't even think we should get into that anymore.
It's just pissing me off.
Yeah. All right. Well, so
did you hear the funny story about Cheap Trick?
Yeah, no, what?
I brought it up on Music Relish as a news story because it just made me laugh. Like, they're going to tour without Rick Nielsen. You know, Rick Nielsen, the guitar player.
Yeah. I heard there was something going on with that. But
it's like, this is what I say, it's why tour? Can't you hold off? So they're going to have Robin Zander's son fill in. And I'm like, if you saw a Cheap Trick without Rick Nielsen, you'd be pissed. I'd be pissed.
Well, how many people haven't seen them that are fans? That's one thing, right?
True.
And I actually held his guitar. I told you the story. He handed me his guitar during a concert one time.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. His name, Rick Nielsen. Is that
yeah.
Yeah. I was working security at the, in Albuquerque, and I've told this story before. I was working concert security. I was stationed in at Kirtland Air Force Base, and a bunch of us cops would get we got a security company hired us. It's private. We weren't acting in a military capacity, just a side job to do concert security at the University of Albuquerque had an arena. And so Cheap Trick was playing. They were backing up Stone Temple Pilots, right? So they always had me in the pit. Right. And I think he just froze. I think Mark just froze. I don't know what's going on. Anyways, I'll finish the story. Yeah, he froze. I don't see any bars, but I'm going to finish the story anyway. So what happens is, let's bring him back. He's back.
Oops, my fault.
That's all right. That's all right. So I was saying, I was working concert security at the arena, University of Albuquerque, and Cheap Trick was backing up Stone Temple Pilots, and they always put me up in the pit. And I got my back to the stage, and I have my back to the stage, and during the show, and all of a sudden I see something buzz by my head, but from behind, like from the stage. And I don't think anything of it, and then I see something else buzz by my head, and I'm still looking, and all of a sudden I feel something hit me in the back of the head. And I turn around, and the band is there, right? I'm like, what the fuck? So then I turn around, I'm looking at the stage, and all of a sudden, bang, something hits me in the back of the head again. Because I'm like shoulders up from the stage, right?
Right.
Stage is like right below my shoulders. So my head is kind of, we're all over. And I turn around and fucking, he's Rick Nielsen, right? He's fucking, he's flicking guitar picks at me. Right?
Not cool. You're the security.
And I turned around and I caught him. Like I caught him, and he's playing, and he kind of laughs, and I mouthed to him, "You motherfucker!" Right? I did, and loud, and he's just laughing. He's like, "So then, I don't know." Like two songs later, he comes over, and he's standing behind me, and I'm like, "He's just fucking egging me on, right? Now he's just fucking with me." And he's standing like right over like his feet are like shoulder length, right? Yeah. And I know he's there, but you can't look because you're supposed to do, you know, now all eyes are on me, right?
Yeah.
And so he's playing, and he kind of tapped me with his foot, and I turn around, and I look up, and he takes his guitar off and he hands it to me. Fucking hands me his guitar, and I'm like, what the fuck? Right? And so I do the only thing I know what to do. I just start going round, 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 right? And he walks away. Oh. And I'm like, what the fuck? Right? And so I'm standing there for like 15 seconds just holding his guitar. People are going crazy in the front row, like right at the barrier. And all of a sudden, I see out of the corner of my eye this black guy. He had to be 6'8". This guy was a fucking man mountain. And he comes walking from the side of the stage into the pit, and he comes walking toward me, and he leans down in my ear and he says, "You know you can't keep that, right?" And I look at him and he's smiling, like he's not being as he's smiling. He's like, "Right?" Yeah. I said, "Right." And I hand him the guitar, and he just nods. He smiles and walks away with the guitar.
Rick Nielsen was fucking with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
See, Jack doesn't have those little brushes of fame. Jack goes to more concerts than me. But I think I've had more experiences with.
Yeah, but if Rick Nielsen had handed Jack the guitar, he would have been able to play with the band.
Oh, fuck you. You guitarists all stick together. Fuck
yeah, we do.
Now I'm really going to smash you on next Tuesday night. Unless you're on the show with me. Then dude, I'll have to wait till the following week.
I got three older sisters. Nothing can fail.
Nothing, huh?
Nothing.
Hey, nothing. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. So give me, my buddy Todd sent me this too. There are some bands that have a song with the same name as the band. An example is Bad Company, the song Bad Company.
Mm-hmm.
Give me, there's the train. There it is. Now I feel like Jack's on with me.
It's going southbound to Secaucus for the junction to Manhattan, Penn Station.
I've said this before. Do you ever watch the show Supernatural? It was a great fucking show. It was a great show. I watched it every season, beginning to end. It was a great fucking show. It never skipped a beat. Never jumped the fence. Never jumped the shock. But every episode, every single episode, there's a train in the background at one point in time in the show or another.
Mm. Wow. Yeah,
there's just always a train. They made sure, the writers made sure there was always a little train at one point in the background you could hear. It doesn't matter where they were. So every time I hear that train, I think of that show. There you go. Yeah. A little more useless knowledge. So give me a group that has a song name, same name as the group, or has the group's name in the title of the song.
I'll go with an obvious Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath, right?
Okay.
What about, give me some more. Can you think of any more?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well,
get the Smitties. Come on.
I am. I'm thinking all metal right now, which is a mistake.
Well, there's one metal that I'm looking at right here.
What's that?
Iron Maiden.
Good one. Yeah.
Right? Anything
else? Why didn't the Police have a song called The Police?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a ton of them. There's a ton of them.
There is a shitload of them.
Motorhead. Oh, God, yeah.
Right? Night Ranger.
There's a song called Night Ranger?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Slipknot.
I didn't know that.
Talk. Because like I say to Jack, all you do to me is talk. If you come up with anything along the way.
I'm thinking furiously, which is not much for me.
Bad Religion. Damn Yankees, who I never liked. Damn Yankees. This group, I fucking despise. You know who I despise more than any group on the face of this planet.
Well, there's a few.
No, this is the group. This is the group that I think is so fucking overrated. Green Day. Fucking Green. I'd eat a skunk's ass before I fucking went to see Green Day.
We mentioned you on Music Relish. We were talking about albums that reignited a band's career. So I had to say American Idiot, but I prefaced it with Scott's favorite band.
No. I know you were saying it. Second, Ice House. I actually liked Ice House. Had a couple of good hits in the 80s.
Yeah. There was an Ice House beer, too. That's how
Yeah, there was. That's right. Yeah.
Horrible.
Cool in the Gang.
Wow.
Meat Puppets. Porno for Pyros. They Might Be Giants. I'd never listened to them either. They Might Be Giants. Wilco. The Monkees. Hey, we're the Monkees. Now this gets a little. My buddy get Judas Priest, and it's called Judas Rising. Now I think they start stretching it out then.
Yeah.
But like Big Country in a Big Country, I'll give them that one.
Yeah.
You know, Stray Cats, you get Stray Cat Strut.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. Yeah.
I got one.
You got one.
And you know what? That's better than my record with music trivia. So.
Well, speaking of music trivia.
Oh, no. Where are you?
Here we go. Brush up on your years, buddy.
Okay.
Get your thinking cap on. Stop thinking years. All right.
Okay.
Take a sip of wine. Get yourself prepped. No, that's not going to help, right?
No,
that's not
going to help. But I'm going to anyway.
There you go. All right. I didn't hear a ting tonight either.
Well, I didn't mention Steve Wilson, Loister Colt, or REM, because we have to do that for Tom. But all three of those, Tom, that's for you, so screw you.
Yeah, Tom's working. All right, here we go. Trivia.
Okay.
In what year did Culture Club release Karma Chameleon? I'm going to keep score here.
I'm trying to think what grade I was in when I saw it. I'm going to go with 83. That's my first. Yeah, it was a year before high school. Yeah.
That's one.
Eighth grade. Okay.
All right. Michael Jackson passed away just before his tour in this year. So in other words, what year did Michael Jackson die?
Oh my God. This is the stuff I'm terrible at. All right. It's going to look stupid when I say this. 2007.
Ooh, close. 2009. Really? Yeah.
I remember the CNN. I remember seeing the report.
Let's see. In what year did Lionel Richie, like him or not, you know all his songs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, didn't he?
Yeah, I think this last time around.
I think that he's deserving of that. I really do.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, that's the Music Hall of Fame. It's not the Rock and Roll. Change the name, but it's already been branded, so they can't change it. In what year did Lionel Richie release Hello? Is it me you're looking for?
That's got a great guitar solo in it. '84.
Okay, yo.
I'm thinking freshman year. Freshman year in high school.
That's two. There you go. You've already tied your record. You got plenty to go. I got a bunch of them, man.
here goes. Well,
the second half of these questions are James Bond questions. So, what year did the Killers release? And I asked Jack this one time. I was surprised when I saw the date. And that's not to throw you off. It's just, in what year did the Killers release Mr. Brightside? Coming out of my cage and I've been doing just fine. Gotta be down because I want it all. Is that it all with the kids?
I'm going to go with 2012.
Oh, 2003.
No, really?
Yeah, is that long
ago? That long ago?
Fuck yeah.
Something's wrong with me. Yeah, I'm losing the sense of time.
When I saw that the first time, I asked Jack this probably last year. Because like I had said, this is episode 79. The first episodes were released February, or as I say, the proper pronunciation, February.
All right.
2021.
Scooby.
Yeah, so I'm coming up on 2 years and a couple months, I know. So let me see.
The Killers are an old band already.
Yeah, yeah.
Get them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I asked him this, and it's 2003.
Wow.
In what year was the song YMCA released?
I'm going to go with the tail end of the whole disco era. I'm going to say 78.
Look at you.
It's because I got no pressure. Lou's not here. Lou gets me nervous. That's why. Because I know he knows it. He knows everything.
Okay. In what year did Elvis release Heartbreak Hotel?
Oh.
In what year did Elvis release Heartbreak Hotel?
1956.
Fucking Smitty! Holy shit.
See, you know when that guy throws a ball? Hold on.
For the podcast listeners, you should see his face when he gets it right. Sounds like if you're a podcast listener and you're not watching the live stream, you'd be saying, damn. Look, oh, even Perry did. Hey, Perry. Perry says Mark stepped in shit tonight.
I sure did.
So far, so good. He's got another one. So
you know when you see a guy throw a ball and it goes in the tiniest hole in the wall and he says, I meant to do that. Yeah, you know, I knew that. I knew that Heartbreak Hotel.
You're four out of six right now.
Never did that good.
It looks like four out of six. All right, now we move on to something a little tougher. Maybe, maybe not. All right, first of all, how many male singers did James Bond themes?
Jeez, and I've seen every movie. I'm going to go with two. I'm thinking Duran Duran and Paul McCartney.
Nope. It was four. Duran Duran, Paul McCartney, Tom Jones did one.
Yeah.
And Louis Armstrong did one.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
Good one.
That's a
tough one. Got a headache.
So, but that wasn't one of the questions. That was a side question.
Oh, come on.
Who said, well, you got it wrong. I'm throwing that one out. Let's give it that. I'm throwing it out. All right. Who sang the theme? Oh, this one's easy. I forget the name of the song. I forget the name of the movie. I'm going to throw that one out. It was Nobody Does It Better. You would have known Carly Simon.
Carly Simon.
What movie was that from?
Moonraker.
Moonraker.
I think it was Moonraker, yeah.
All right. Who did the theme to 2012's Skyfall?
Oh.
This is a good movie. The last Bond movie, I won't see it. He turned into a beta male. Took a back seat.
Oh, God. You know, you're going to kill me. You're going to laugh at me. I want to say garbage. What's her name? But no. I'm hearing it in my head. Couldn't you ask me about the last one?
Now, Garbage did do one, but that's not the one.
I don't know. I can't remember. Who was it?
Adele.
Yeah.
Adele. As I used to drive my stepdaughter crazy and say, Adelaide? What? It's Adele. Nope, spelled Adelaide. Who did the theme song to 1967's You Only Live Twice?
Was that Shirley Bassey?
Nope. Nancy Sinatra.
Oh my God, yeah.
I have a CD.
I have a double CD with all the theme songs. I should know.
I just watched the documentary. It's on Netflix and it covered all the Bond songs.
I think it's on Prime.
Is it on Prime?
Yeah. One of them, because they have all the Bond movies too.
Yeah. And it did the whole documentary on just Bond themes. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
They had said at one point that the recommendation was that Shirley Bassey do them all.
Hmm.
And they were like, nah, she did a number.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Who did the theme song to 1992's GoldenEye?
Was that Madonna?
Tina Turner.
Oh, kind of fell out with the Pierce Brosnan ones.
Yeah. Who sang the theme to The World Is Not Enough?
Oh, man, I'm getting the Schmitties. Is that Charlie Manson?
Garbage. There you go.
It was. Okay. I'm visualizing the voice in my mind. Yeah.
She actually sang it in concert when I saw her back up at Tim's visit. They did it. She sounded great anyways. Like I said about that show, she was, that was a bucket list a double bucket list, and she is a fucking rock star. Shirley Manson is a rock star.
Yeah.
Absolutely control the stage. Absolutely has a great stage presence. She's an older woman now, but she's still fucking, and she doesn't look as nice as she did when she was younger. But, you know, hey, listen, that's rock and roll. She had kids. She grew up. But needless to say, great fucking stage presence, great command, great voice. Just the girl is a rock star. The woman's a rock star.
Yeah.
Who sang the theme to No Time to Die from 2020?
It wasn't a male. I was almost going to say a male singer.
No Time to Die.
It's not Billie Eilish. She did the last one. Wait, was it Billie Eilish? Yeah, duh.
I'm such an idiot. Walked past that. Oh,
I'm thinking, the latest one came out in 2022. I'm so dumb.
If you walked past that, that would have been it, maybe, right? Because you said it's the last one, and that was the last one, wasn't it?
Look, you tried to give me one of the answers a while back, and I still didn't get what you were saying. Still didn't get it,
Who sang the theme to 1965's Thunderball?
That would be Shirley Bassey.
Nope.
Nope. Okay.
Tom Jones.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Can I just go to my CD collection real quick? I just want to look at my John Denver CDs. I promise you.
Sure, you can do it if you want. I don't care. I don't care. Nah. I was telling somebody recently, I said, you know, when Lou and Mark came on, I said they were kind of, you know, I think they might have been a little apprehensive because they know the show and they kind of know the flow, but they didn't really, I don't know if they thought they might overstep something or, you know, and I had to finally tell them, just fucking say whatever you want. I don't care.
No.
Do whatever you want. I don't care.
I told you, we still had PTSD at the time of when we did the phones. Don't talk when someone's talking because you cancel each other out. So me and Lou are like, what?
Exactly. But I always said, don't do whatever the fuck you want. It's that's what this is all. I don't care. I don't care. Go off subject. I don't fucking care. The listeners seem to like it.
I'm going to light some fireworks off of my room.
There you go. Hey, listen, Jack got up and made a fucking sandwich one show, so you can't fucking beat that.
That's one of the best moments in Milk Crates and Turntables ever.
Well, there wasn't. Then I kind of broke out the banana the next show and started eating a banana during the show. So he wasn't expecting that one.
I guess I got to get a crinkly bag of Doritos one time. This is a whole show, you know.
Do that during Music Relish. Perry will lose his fucking mind. I guarantee he would lose his mind.
Chew ice.
Yeah. All right. Who sang the theme to 1969's We Have All the Time in the World? It's a very it's not one of the more popular Bond movies. We Have All the Time in the World, 1969.
Is that from Her Majesty's Secret Service?
No, the name of that movie is Her Majesty's Secret Service.
No, I meant We Have All the Time in the... Wait, what are you...
Is that the name of the song or is that the name of the movie?
The movie. No, which movie was that?
I think you're right. I think it is Her Majesty's Secret
Service. Yeah, okay.
Way they did this, I didn't put... The way they put this together, they kind of mixed in the song and without the movie.
Man, and that's...
Now, that movie was good. That was...
Yeah, Telly Savalas. Yeah.
The ski scene, the ski chasing scene.
Worst career decision ever made by that guy.
Not doing Bond again. He became a trivia question though.
Yeah. See now if we had hadn't already talked about
he was one of the males. It's a male
Louis singer. Armstrong.
There you go.
Thanks. All right. If I didn't get that, you could have just slapped me right through the camera.
And finally, who sang the theme to 2002's Die Another Day? And I want to go back to We Have All the Time in the World. I was saying that's not one of the more popular because I'm looking at it going, I never heard of that Bond movie. But I was trying to play it off.
When it starts, it's like the first time you see that movie, you're not prepared to hear Louis Armstrong singing, but it gave it a different kind of feel. It was really, you know, good. So that would have been Madonna.
There you go. Look at you. So you
and she made a cameo in that movie too.
Oh, did she? That was
the
sword,
the fencing scene. Yeah, and there she was fencing or something. And she
I didn't watch any of his Bond movies.
It just it wasn't his fault. It was just the writing was terrible.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I just never saw him as Bond. I didn't get the feel. I didn't jump back into Bond until
Daniel Craig
recently. Yeah, Daniel Craig was the best Bond, but he unfortunately sold out on the last movie and fucking he.
You just don't like that movie, do you?
No, I mean I don't like the fact that they dumped him down for the black female, bestest ever agent who was going to be the next 007, and they got him. I saw a meme, and it has I think it has Pierce Brosnan driving a motorcycle with somebody on the back, and they said, and then they were like 2002, and then he said 2022, and you got this fucking black female driving a motor scooter with Daniel Craig on the back. It said it all.
Well, you know, the Broccolis aren't involved anymore, right?
Yeah, I know. And the only way I will go back, I think, to watching Bond is if Tom Hardy becomes James Bond. She would be a good James Bond.
I think the one that got the shaft, because he wasn't bad, the one that really the victim of poor writing was Timothy Dalton. The first one he made was good. The second one, they never left Miami. They're in Miami. So, like, you never have James Bond movies take place in two countries. It's got to be global. Five countries. Yeah.
It's always global. Global. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even in space. They even went to space.
Moonraker.
Yeah. All right, buddy. You did good. Maybe you should play this game alone.
Do I have a sticker, like a smiley face sticker? I could just
Don't go that far. You didn't do that good. You did okay. You did okay, though. Out of 15, you got 6. But these the Bond movies were a little different. That's not, you know.
Boy, that got me good.
All right. Time for the top 10 this week in 1993. Coming in at number 10 this week in 1993 was Anniversary by Tony. It feels good. I like them, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Anniversary, I'm not really. Number 9. One of those gimmick songs that makes it into the fucking top 10. Every once in a while you see it. Whoop, There It Is by Tag Team.
Yeah.
I know, right? Think back. People thought that was actually a cool song. It's like, oh my God. I never did. Trent, thank God. Number 8, Hey Mr. DJ by Zane. Number 7, Shoop, Doopa Loop, Shoopa Loop, Shoopa Loop. Salt and Pepper with Shoop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Number 6, Dream Lover by Mariah Carey. Number 5, Gangsta Lean by DRS. Number 4, Just Kicking It by Xscape. It's funny how you listen to these, so you see these songs, you're like, these are fucking one and dones.
Yeah.
These are just one and dones. I guess they could be considered hits.
Yeah. One hit wonders. 10,
right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Number 3 this week in 1993, again by Janet Jackson. Number 2 this week in 1993, All That She Wants by Ace of Base. I was never a big Ace of Base fan.
I love that song.
People do. I mean, I'm not putting them down. I just wasn't really a big Ace of Base. The sound wasn't.
Well,
I guess that song, I Got the Time, I guess I heard that way too much.
When I bought that CD for that song and I heard the rest of the CD, and I'm like, they're okay, you know.
Yeah, they're like club music, like I'd be listening to
nothing them, special, but. Yeah.
No. Yeah. But they made it to number 2 this week in 1993. And number 2 for 2 weeks in a row, actually, because I have the last one, Janet Jackson was number 3 down from 4, and just has that whole thing. And number 1 this week in 1993.
Don't say it's Hootie and the Blowfish, please.
No. Didn't they? Did they came out a little later than that, didn't they?
Like, I 96? Don't know, but I just can't stand them.
I think they came out like 96, I think.
Yeah, it was that frat rock thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack always says that to me. I only want to be with you. Jack says it to me all the time. I told him, no, you can't. Number one this week in 1993, Meatloaf. I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that.
A comeback.
So Jack says that was his biggest song. I still say Paradise by the Dashboard Light was his probably biggest song.
No, I've read that I'd do anything for love. Yeah. That was his biggest. And it surprises me too, because I was young when Bad Outta Hell came out, but to me, that's like his all-time.
That's a great, I guess that's how I look at it. It's a class song. I'd do anything for love is a good song. It actually is a good song. Yeah. All right, that's it for this week in 1993. I'll tell you, I try to look into the 20s, and I'm like, there's nothing there. I mean, I don't know. I try to jump around, but I always seem to kind of come back to the 80s, 90s, and maybe early 2000s. But
2000s have bands that flicked up and then boom, they fell off. You won't even know who they are when you read it.
Yeah. All right. It's time for This Day in Music.
Is it? Yes, all right. It is. Yay.
What's today's date? November 16th. So in this day, on November 16th, 1960, Patsy Cline recorded I Fall to Pieces, which the following year became Cline's first number one hit in the country charts and her second hit in the hit single to cross over to pop charts. It was the first of a string of songs that would be written by Hank Cochran and Harlan Howard. Now, them some Southern boys right there.
Yeah.
Them some Southern boy names right there. Right? The song was ranked at number 7 on CMT's television special of the 100 Greatest Songs in Country Music. On this day in 1968, the Jimi Hendrix Experience went to number 1 in the U.S. album charts with their third and final studio album.
Axis Bold of No, Electric Ladyland.
There you go.
Electric Ladyland.
The double album included Crosstown Traffic, Voodoo Child, and the best version of All Along the Watchtower. Yeah. Hendrix expressed displeasure and embarrassment with this Naked Lady cover, which was banned by several record dealers as pornographic, while others were smart enough to sell it with the gatefold cover turned inside out. They kind of just opened it and bent it. All right. On this day in 1968, Led Zeppelin played their first ever show in the north of England when they appeared at the Manchester College of Science and Technology. Zeppelin was paid £225 for the gig. I've said this in the past, Manchester, they're in that Manchester, the Madchester scene of the late 80s into the early 90s. The University of Manchester was the number one requested college to go to by high school students in all of Britain.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But did they want to actually learn?
No. No. Fuck no. I don't think so. On this day in 1971, Frank Zappa appeared on this week's UK TV music show, The Old Grey Whistle Test, playing live and showing clips from his 200 Motels film. Did you ever fucking see that thing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What the fuck was that garbage?
Well, so I'm not a, I got where he was like going
Monty
with it.
Monty Python on acid.
But I don't do drugs, so I think he really had to do drugs to watch it.
You had to.
But he didn't do drugs.
No. No, but he knew what his fans wanted.
Yeah.
That shit, I fucking couldn't. It was like, this is God. This is like, it didn't age well.
Yeah, yeah.
Did not age well.
I'm a Zappa fan, so. But even I had trouble with it.
Yeah. I mean, I do like titties and beer. Literally, not the song. I do. So, anyways.
You like singers' mouths. That's what I've learned about.
Oh, Carly Simon, Sheryl Crow. Yeah. Yeah,
Pat Benatar.
Pat Benatar, yep, absolutely. On this day in 1974, John Lennon was at number one on the U.S. singles charts with, take a guess, 74. Number one.
Whatever Gets You Through the Night?
Good, look at you fucking.
You've been listening to a lot of Lennon.
The show. You're killing it tonight.
My son got me the Lennon box set a couple years ago, and I'm finally starting to listen to this stuff. So.
All right, he was at number one in the U.S. singles chart with Whatever Gets You Through the Night. Elton John played on the session and made a deal with Lennon that if the song reached number one, Lennon would have to appear on stage live with Elton. Lennon kept his side of the deal and appeared live with Elton John.
Mm-hmm.
They played three songs together, I Saw Her Standing There, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, and Whatever Gets You Through the Night. That'd be pretty fucking cool to see that.
Oh, yeah.
If you're at that show, you fucking got a bonus.
Yeah.
A big bonus there. Backstage after the concert, Lennon got back with Yoko Ono after a temporary split. In other words, his other Japanese girlfriend got left in the dust that he had in L.A. I forgot her name. That poor girl. You know May she Pang. Never got anything.
Huh? May Pang, right?
May Pang. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
On this day in 1976, Beach Boy Brian Wilson gave his first formal interview for 8 years on the UK BBC Two TV show. Say that three times fast. Old Grey Whistle Test. On this day in 1985, U2 launched their own record label, Mother Records. The intent was to unearth fresh musical talent in Ireland. And the label released several one-off single releases from the Hothouse Flowers, the Tua Nua, and Cactus World News. And just only the Hothouse Flowers really did anything out of that trio.
Yeah. It wasn't Swan Song Records for sure.
Definitely no, which only had Bad Company and Led Zeppelin. So couldn't hard to beat that.
I think Madonna had the most successful label, Maverick Records. They signed a lot of bands.
Did they?
Yeah, Madonna. Rock and but she wasn't doing the signing.
She wasn't. Label,
yeah.
On this day in 1985, music listeners made the. And this is my take on it. Music listeners made the fucking worst decision in music history when they decided that Starship started a 2-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with We Built This City. Biggest fucking, I mean, people do not look back kindly on that fucking.
Oh, no.
Who ever thought to buy that fucking record and think it was good?
And the cover,
video was even fucking horrible.
And the cover, when you went to the record store, that cover sucked. It was horrible. You can see Grace Slick's silhouette of her hair.
Yeah, I've heard songs that suck, but the video was good. This is both suck. I think we actually did a double thing on that. I don't know, worst fucking songs and then worst videos. It gets the double suck award right there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the top of the double suck charts. On this week in double suck music...
Double suck song.
Double suck Green Day.
Come on.
Double suck Green Day. And it was number one on the charts along with Double Suck Hootie and the Blowfish. And coming in number three is, let me see. The charts just changed. Starship goes to Double Suck number one.
Triple Suck.
Triple Suck. Yeah, Perry just said worst song ever, Caddy. That's right. It's the top of the worst song ever.
We all agree on that.
I'd listen to Disco Duck. On a desert island.
Ooh.
Rather than fucking Built This City. Yeah. That song could double suck. Well, it does double suck. Yeah. It was a sad day. Let me see. It was a sad day this day in 1987. Former Clash drummer, Topper Hedden, was jailed for 15 months at Maidstone Crown Court, England, for supplying heroin to a man who later died, and then didn't he eventually... he died, but I don't think it was from drug overdose, but
yeah.
Let me see. On this day in 1988, former Beach Boys manager, Steve Love, I'm sure it's Mike Love's brother, was sentenced to 5 years probation for embezzling almost $1 million from the group's account.
That's
fucker only got probation. What the fuck? On this day in 2000, it was a sad day, this day in 2000, American rapper Joseph Kalaja, you know who that is?
No.
A.K.A. Joe C.
That rings a bell.
Died of chronic intestinal disorder.
Who?
He was, let me see, he had celiac disease. An autoimmune disorder that can cause stunted growth as a result. Getting any hints? He reached a maximum height of 3 feet 9 inches by adulthood. And he was a member of Kid Rock's band.
Oh, that guy. Oh.
Had the fucking, had the Stetson, the hat. He always looked fucking. They met him. He was at a one of the, when Kid Rock was just kind of starting out and he was popular in Detroit, he met Joe C at a show. Joe C was up on a table. And Kid Rock saw him, like he could see him. And after the show, he thought it was like a kid. Like he's like, hey, and he kind of went up to him and finds out he's like 19. You know?
Yeah.
And he's like, do you want to be in the band? That's how cool fucking Kid Rock is. Does it get any cooler than that? You want to be in the band? Fucking come on. I'll bring you. Let's go on tour. He fucking made video. I mean, Cowboy is a great fucking video.
Got it.
Cowboy, when Joe C and fucking, in what's his name? Gary Coleman face off. Did you ever see that video? Cowboy by Kid Rock?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fucking great. Yeah, Joe C died this day in 2000. But he had a good life, man. You got it like, you know, like the dude that played Mini-Me. Yo, he had a fucking good life.
Yep.
He might have been like a tortured little soul. Little soul.
Oh, man. Come on.
What are you making fun of dwarfs for? But he had a good, the guy was fucking world famous. Vern, whatever his name is.
I think the most tortured soul of the little was Hervé Villechaize. I heard he was fucked up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I heard he was an angry guy.
Angry little guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
On this day in 2002, Texan multi-billionaire David Bonderman hired the Rolling Stones to play at his 60th birthday party held at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. The band's fee was $4.8 million.
And they played three songs and they went off.
Probably. And on this day in 2006, Queen's Greatest Hits album was declared the best-selling UK album of all time by the official UK charts company. The chart, which was made up of sales figures from the last 50 years, showed their greatest hits compilation has sold 5,407,587 copies.
That was the greatest hits album.
Yeah. The Beatles occupied second place with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And born on this day, let's see, I don't have many. Born on this day in 1945, Paul Raymond, English keyboardist and guitarist. Paul Raymond joined Plastic Penny in the early 60s as their keyboardist, vocalist, and replaced Christine McVie in that band. Yeah. He went on to join UFO in 76. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He played with the band during four different stints. He was a regular in the UFO lineup since 2003. Raymond also worked with Michael Schenker in MSG.
Mm-hmm.
He died April 13th, 2019, at the age of 73.
On the road, as the UFO been doing a four-year farewell tour. And two members have died while they're doing the farewell tour.
It's literally a farewell tour.
And UFO were like the Stones. They were a hard rock Stones because Paul Raymond looked like he could have been like Ron Wood's brother. He had that thing going and everything. Yeah. Great guy. Met him once. Great guy.
Let's see. Born on this day in 1962, Gary Manny Mountfield, English rock bassist. Best known for being a member of the Stone Roses, playing on both the band's albums. Well, that's a story, man. The Stone Roses. I'll get into that one day. That's that's definitely a what could have been story right there.
Oh, my son-in-law loves them.
Yeah. And they played with Primal Scream. Mountfield has a guest role in the movie 24 Hour Party People. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
You got to watch it. That is the Matt Chester scene. It basically breaks it down. What's his name? Now I'm getting the Schmitties.
Can I do a trivia test with you?
Nah, I'm fucking stuck right now. I'm stuck.
Musician, artist.
Yeah, he's an artist. Let's see. One second. Da, da, da,
da, da, da. Well, I'm a Liverpool fan, so I'm more of a Liverpool guy.
Let's see. Yeah. Paul Ryder, brother of Sean Ryder from the Happy Mondays, who just passed away, has a starring role. He has a bit part in that movie, too.
Okay.
So, 24-hour party, people. It's if you want to see how the Manchester scene really started and how it really played out, that's a good movie to watch right there.
And you're a big Happy Mondays fan, right?
Yeah, I like the Happy
Mondays. Yeah, you recommended some stuff for me to listen to, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, check out 24-hour party, people. But, yeah, Born in This Day, lead the guitarist for the bassist for Stone Roses. All right, moving on. On this day, born on this day in 1964, Diana Krall.
Mm.
Diana Krall, Canadian singer-songwriter. Krall has become one of the best-selling jazz artists of all time.
Sultry.
Nominated for Album of the Year at the 2000 Grammy, won 3 Juno Awards in 2002, Artist of the Year, Album of the Year, and Best Vocal Jazz Album of the Year. And finally, born on this day in 1966, Dave Kushner, American musician best known as the rhythm guitarist for Velvet Revolver. Kushner has also been a member of Wasted Youth, Electric Love Hogs, Loaded, Danzig, and with Dave Navarro's solo band, Sugar Tooth.
And that's Danzig. It, buddy. That's it. That.
We came in right at 2 hours, 1 minute.
All right. I guess, guy, here, what comes after January?
February.
Roray, rubber.
Well, fuck you. I'm telling you, all you motherfuckers that say February, you're saying it wrong. Look at the way it's spelled. But coffee. I think it's like this majority thing. Everybody says February, so it's got to be right. No. Look at the way it's spelled. There's no silent R in there.
You got a point. You got a point.
There is no silent R. I say it right. Look, I'm from Boston. I leave my R's out of everything except for February.
Yeah. I just like that you sound like Scooby-Doo. Come on.
Yeah, you better not be on the show Tuesday. If you're on the show, if you're not on the show Tuesday night, you're getting
good
crushed, buddy.
I'm going to tell my sisters to watch. Like, you got competition, guys.
Yeah.
No, Jack better be back Tuesday because I want to be sitting there with a glass of wine watching you guys.
He's a wild card lately, but I love him. He's always
He's awesome.
Well, listen, my friend, thank you very much. As usual, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your knowledge. You kind of crushed it on fucking trivia tonight. I give you a lot of credit. If I don't have you on the show Tuesday night and we don't kind of connect, have a great Thanksgiving. But too, if I'm Jack. Doing the show Tuesday night,
I just called you Jack. You too, Scott. See? Oh,
fuck. You know what?
Oh, my God.
I should just cut. Oh, look, he's gone. Oh, what happened to Mark? He's like, he left. Like, yeah. That's all right. That's all right, Lou. Perry. Oh, what's your name? Tom. What's your name?
Again? Harry. I'm Harry.
No, you're the dick. Between Tom and Harry.
Biggest thing you know.
That's it. Listen, everybody, I appreciate you guys listening. As I always say, you are the engine that runs this machine. Without you, I'd just be doing this show, episode 79, to nobody. So, I'm with Mark, so I guess that counts as something.
Yeah, one-on-one.
Yeah, okay. What is it, a Hall & Oates song here? No, that's actually a good song. I like that song.
Yeah.
And as I always say, let me start by saying, if you like the show, if you like the podcast, share it. Tell someone, a music lover, about it. Because as we know, music podcasts are just, they're a small niche in the podcast world. But I don't have any plans of stopping anytime soon. So
thank you.
Share it and like it. And if you can leave a comment, I don't know. I stopped saying that months ago because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not in this for the money. I'm not going to make money doing this. And as I always say, doing the show for you, to quote my favorite artist, Morrissey, who walked out on a show 30 minutes into it the other night in L.A. because it was too cold.
Oh, boy.
I love that guy. I fucking love it. That guy does whatever the fuck he wants. He doesn't care. And he's still Morrissey.
Yeah.
He's still Morrissey. Doesn't matter. Wow. I always said it's a wild card. He's a wild card. Like when you buy tickets You don't know if he's going to actually. We were lucky enough.
How would you feel if you went to the show and he walked out after 30 minutes?
Look, I would have said, well, I just went to a Morrissey show. Because I'm a fan. Maybe I wouldn't have liked it, but I would have been, well, it's what you expect.
You're right.
This guy is not, he's a wild card, right?
You're a true fan. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just went to a Morrissey show and I got to see whatever he sang, Girlfriend in a Coma. I saw a couple videos from it. But yeah, he walked out on his show. Look, my wife and I are fortunate enough to see him in LA. I mean, and see him in Miami. And then saw him at Madison Square Garden, and he put on two great shows. I could probably die with that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I saw two great shows and two great venues, two great cities, you know, apples and oranges, big apples and literally oranges. Right? I just put that together.
Oh, wow. That was good.
Look at that. Look at me.
You're rhyming.
Anyways, doing the show for you, the pleasure, the privilege is mine. And tonight, Mark Smith. And I'll see you guys next Tuesday night. I don't know who I'll be with. It's either going to be Mark and Lou, Mark or Jack. One or the other. One of those three. But I'll see
Perry.
You. We'll be back. All right, everybody. Thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
Perry's a bot. I'm telling you, he's a bot. All right, everybody. I'll see you Tuesday night.